Welcome to Season 8 of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast. This is where we chat with experts in the field, patients who use these devices, physical therapists, and the vendors who make it all happen. Our goal? To share stories, tips, and insights that ultimately help our patients get the best possible outcomes. Tune in and join the conversation. We are thrilled you are here and hope it is the highlight of your day.
Hi, everyone. I'm Joris Peels, and this is another edition of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Brent Wright. How you doing, Brent?
Hey, Joris. I'm doing well, man. It's good to be on, and I'm really excited about this podcast today. We don't have a guest today, but we wanted to dive deep into a piece that I saw. And so I know we've been talking back and forth on it, but I'm really excited about that.
Okay, good. Yeah, cool. That's super good, dude. All right, super good. Do we have a sponsor for this episode? Do we have people that made this possible or something like that?
Yeah, in fact, I almost jumped the gun. I was so excited about this too. But so Advanced 3D is the sponsor for this season. It's a contract manufacturer specializing in orthotics and prosthetics, but much more than that. I'm a part of it along with Paul and Tyler. And what we try to do is get people involved in digital somehow, meeting you wherever you have a need. And so, so really excited. So check us out. If you have any questions about where to get started, either from scanning, design, software packages, to printing test sockets, to definitive sockets, we're here to help.
Awesome. All right, cool. So what's this big news you're falling all over yourself to talk about? Because it must be big news because we've actually never thought of doing this, right? We've talked about some trends in the industry, some things maybe you should do, the future of this industry. We've never just talked about one news item for the whole episode. So what's this big, big deal you want to talk about?
Well, so Embla Medical just had a bunch of stuff kind of come up under its umbrella. And they released a 39-page graphic story about their company. And I think...
What's Embla Medical? what is that? What is Embla Medical? That sounds like a terrorist group.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so... So it's
it's Embla. It's Embla coming. They're going to take over the diamond fields. No, like, seriously, what is Embla?
So Embla Medical, they do a lot of things in the rehab space. They say they cover anything with like chronic mobility impaired people and acutely injured people. And so they do that through not only patient care centers, but then also through vendors like Össur, like College Park, like Fjordgens. And those, that's kind of their umbrella. And so they're kind of building out their space.
So Össur, I heard of them, right? Even like a noob prosthetics orthotics newbie like myself has heard of Össur. So wait, did they buy Össur? What's going on here exactly?
That's a great question. From my understanding is it must be like a funding group that's over top. So I don't know if it's a
I think they actually made like a bigger kind of company entity to control themselves. I think Össur is establishing Embla Medical, right? That's going to be the listed company. So the Össur's listed entity will be Embla Medical. Össur HF, whatever that is, I think that's the parent company, will change itself to Embla Medical, right? And the idea is that Össur has changed because it does now prosthetics, neuroorthotic braces, lots of things in these segments. And it wants to be a better, bigger global entity. And that's why they've chosen Embla, the first woman on earth, and references to new beginnings, movement, and freedom. That's the Embla is actually a Norse mythological thing, which is good, of course, because Össur is from, probably the biggest company in Iceland, I think. and so they're doing a name change to Embla Medical. They won't change any kind of thing. It's a parent of product brands, which is Össur, College Park, and Fjordgens, which I don't know what that is, which are the customer care facilities. And they're going to, and they have to get approval for it. So that, and they have to get, and the major shareholder, which is the Willem de Mont Invest, which is, I think it's kind of like a family office kind of thing, is all for it. Right. So and it would also change their ticker symbol to Embla, right? And that's the news which they hope to do. So it's proposed. Next month they'll vote on it, so maybe it gets toned down. But it is kind of like it signifies, I guess, they have a broader ambition than just becoming the kings of prosthetics, I guess, right?
Yeah, well, and you know what's interesting is we've talked a lot, and I haven't looked all the way through this report, but I am guessing they might have a couple things up their sleeves in the exoskeleton world, rehab world, and things of that nature, which power robotics and such. And so to have an umbrella that captures all that and do something, mm-hmm. these powered exoskeletals are not only for people that have some sort of issues or weakness or paralyzation or what have you, but it also is very much used in the industry. How do you help warehouse workers and things of that nature? And having an umbrella group probably helps house some of that instead of it being super niche just in prosthetics and orthotics.
And it could be they're doing a bunch of different things as well. Like this kind of like, it's kind of difficult to kind of think, you know, you're OSER this and they also have patient care. They also have, it also can be really confusing. And also for customers and prospective customers, it really is kind of like a really kind of, you know, kind of confusing thing. And for the people who maybe don't know less than me about orthotics and prosthetics, OSER is a giant Reykjavik big company, right? They are, you know, absolutely huge. They are in a lot of things, like you said, and they're a disproportionate influence on the market, let's say, right? Like with Ottobock and OSER, they're always kind of like named together. They're both kind of very large. And, you know, the rest of the market is very fragmented. So the big players are either them or the insurance companies. And yeah, everybody else is like, you know, the two people, 100 people, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, they had $786 million in sales in 2023. And just for like a perspective, and that's operations in 36 countries, Hanger Prosthetics and Orthotics had just shy of $1 billion. So as far as in revenue, very large amount of revenue. And the crazy thing about this kind of vertical integration, not only with the clinics, but also with manufacturers, is your margins on manufacturing are going to be higher than, say, margins in patient care. But how cool is it to have the margins in your manufacturing, and then you sell to yourself, and you have the margins in patient care?
And OSER is not a bad business at all. It's got like $700 million in revenue, something like that, $129 million gross profit. And the margins, actually, because you're talking about margins, 61%, which is really quite healthy, really, really quite nice. And I think, you know, most people with a business, especially with a physical hardware type business.
Well, and one of the other things that I found very interesting about what they've done, when you take a look at where they do their manufacturing, one thing sticks out big time, and I don't know if it did for you as well, is they have fabrication in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And so Mexico is a great place. Smart. Not only do you have a great labor market, but you have a lot of skilled labor and kind of tribal knowledge in the manufacturing side of things at a high level with high technology type things. And then, especially if you're distributing into the US, that jump from Mexico into the US is not that big of a deal. But then you go south, you can capture Central America and South America as well, which is amazing.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because, like, you know, Mexico, especially in the States, is kind of saying it's like a low labor country, right? But that's always because, like, you know, every video about Mexico is like some little boy and a donkey and a woman in a flamenco dress, you know, every single, like, kind of like the representation is so poor, I think, in the States. And I think, but if you look at Mexico, we've got a lot of university graduates, we've got a lot of researchers, we've got quite affordable salaries for an external player. And yeah, you're right. I think it's a great point you're making. You've got a lot of really quite high tech and also medium tech, let's say, things like trucks and electronics manufacturing going on there in lower to high value. So that kind of mix is really, really beautiful for, you know, kind of a low mix, high volume, or relatively advanced manufacturing company to do business in that country, I think is a really fantastic thing. I think it's really smart. And yeah, it's not super far away. They could do it in China or Vietnam, right? And the access to the U.S. market, access to, you know, favorable U.S. tax stuff. And also what I also like about this is the sheer distance, right? It's a few days away, right? Cross San Ysidro, whoop, into the States. And you're in the U.S. I don't know exactly what the times cost, but I'm thinking that, you know, from the moment an order comes in to get that product back into the States is actually quite, quite quick. And you could do that quite quick. So with like a custom thing or like quicker turnaround times, you know, if you want to get your money quicker, if you want the patient and the shop to get her stuff quicker, yeah, it's beautiful to be in Mexico. I think it's a really, really good thing you picked up on there.
Yeah. Well, and then looking at their timeline of how they've done their acquisitions, I mean, I'll just go through some of the highlights. So they were founded in 1971. They listed on the stock exchange at the end of the 1990s. They acquire Flexfoot, which was the number one carbon fiber foot engineered solution in 2000. Then they do Royce Medical, which is more in the soft goods side of things. So back braces, mm-hmm. casting equipment, tape, and that sort of thing. And then in 2016, they acquire Touch Bionics and Medi Prosthetics. Those two were big time because then you jump into upper extremity prostheses, bionics, and that sort of thing. And then Medi Prosthetics, they are kind of the manual side of prosthetics. So like they're known for prosthetic knee joints, some other components that are quite affordable that complemented their already very good portfolio of components. So bringing in Medi Prosthetics was very interesting. And then they acquired Naked Prosthetics. And Linda and us, we talked about Naked Prosthetics a little bit. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're the ones that do the partial fingers with the articulation. They're body powered. Very great, interesting. So not only now you kind of own the bionic or hand side of things, you're also into the body powered manual, but high tech. So they use a lot of multi-jet fusion, 3D printing, and that sort of thing. And then in 2024, they acquire Fjord and Gens. And you were like, what are they? Who are they?
It sounds like a fashion brand. That sounds like something like they make jackets for people who sail or something. Yeah.
That's true. And maybe they should. But so what's neat about this company is they have really focused on motion and on the orthotic side of things. So the bracing. So, you know, when you're walking, you have ankle motion and knee motion. And a lot of these braces, you know, pre-joints, I guess, would lock up those joints, which cause some instability, whether it's at your ankle or your knee. Well, they said, hey, let's free it up and let's give some degrees of freedom and control over that. And that's what became Fjord and Gens. And so now that they're into that, that establishes them into the very dynamic ankle foot orthosis market, the dynamic knee ankle foot orthosis market, which they have not been in. But it also sets them up very nice to push into the exoskeleton side of things.
And if you're looking at what these guys are buying, right? Have they bought, because they seem to be to me, but I don't know. Are they buying like kind of like volume leaders, the big volume, or are they buying like the technology leaders? Because that, you know, for example, that carbon foot and the other companies, they seem to be a little bit on the bleeding edge, you know, like they're buying like technology that they could then leverage to build the market, let's say. Is that true or am I wrong? Or
no, I think that's a very fair statement. When you take a look at some of these big acquisitions, these are market leaders, unique, and it also will complement some of the things that they already provide. So it makes them, I know this, like more vertically integrated, right? So so you can actually take care of the whole person. And I mean, very similar to what Hanger has done with, you know, they have patient care centers, they have distribution, they bought PhilHour, which does a lot of the same things. So they're now able to keep all that in-house and also sell to themselves, Oser is doing that in their own way as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think that that technological edge thing is difficult. They were publicly traded quite early, 1999. If all the businesses are quite small, then, you know, I think being publicly traded, even if it is in Iceland, which is a relatively small market, is an advantage, right? And also, there were, and I think this is interesting, because we brought this up a bunch of times in our talks, where we've had people on that are both patients and prosthetists, right? And we know that they have kind of an edge, I guess, between the empathy and the understanding of what matters to patients. And Mr. Oser, or no, sorry, it's Oser Christensen, who's like the founder of Oser, so it's actually his first name, right? Which I think, he was actually a prosthetist, right? And he was also, he had a transtibial limb difference. So he also understood how important the work was, you know? And you know what I love about this? That he invented the silicone liner, or was one of the people to invent the silicone liner. So to me, that also is like a big deal. And that also means that he's got, you know, a patient, prosthetist, and inventor. So that's like, you know, wow. So now he just needs the businessman skill, and he's like, he's there, you know what I mean?
Well, and I think that's so true. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because pretty much every prosthetist as well as patient that has been receiving prostheses for probably 25 years or more point to the liner as the most defining point for technology for prosthetics. So, I mean, that's very much a theme of what we're seeing with now Emblem Medical.
Yeah. And okay. And then another thing is that, okay, which I think is bizarre. This guy then left this hugely successful company to work on boat hulls and building boats. Okay, cool. But, and this is something that I think is kind of relevant, that he actually, Mr. Christensen, he passed away actually in February of this year. So this also kind of bookends his life and his legacy are now kind of, it's his period where he's alive. And now it's the post-founder kind of like, we need a new breath, a new vision. And then also that kind of like, you know, the timing also then makes sense. Maybe also he wasn't on board for the name change, by the way. But also the timing that also makes sense, I think, to as management to like, you know, be like, okay, now it's a new era, you know? And then I think also the big deal, if you look at this, they invested in bleeding edge technology companies that brought them into new systems, right? New tools, right? And then also we're talking about the cross sell, right? I sell you this already. Oh, by the way, I have this thing. Oh, by the way, I also have this. So the same salesperson, the same delivery, the same relationship can cross-sell you all this stuff. So all of it logical. And then all of a sudden they get into patient care. And that's something I think we've talked about a bunch of times on here. We have people that are kind of like uncomfortable with this and that are kind of like, oh, wait a minute, but I thought those were two different islands, right? Those, you know, the patient care plus the thing. And you said, yeah, you can make a ton of money there. But also, it makes me, if I was another device manufacturer, I would be kind of very torn between doing business with the patient care things of Oser or sharing my latest mega innovations. Whereas before, as just a practitioner, I'd be like, oh, I'll tell them everywhere. You want to know anything I know, I'll tell you just to get better devices. So I don't know how that'll play out. You know,
That's going to be an interesting thing is how that plays out with innovation. Will it actually stifle innovation? Especially at an individual level, or will people kind of pull back and say, well, I have this idea and I'm not going to let the big company have it, essentially. That'll be interesting. I want to pivot just a little bit away from, we've never really talked about the numbers of amputees and such, and they have a really nice slide that they've talked about with this. This is wild. So they're saying that 850,000 new major lower limb amputees per year. Now this is where it gets a little bit crazy.
Because if you want to follow along at home, kids, it's the company presentation about Emblem Medical. We'll link to it in the show notes or the things.
Yeah. Slide 11.
Slide 11. Okay. I'm going to be there with you. Okay. So.
So. So 850,000 new major lower limb amputees a year. They say Western world, so Europe and then the US and Canada, to about 200,000 a year. Emerging markets, so that's a nice way of, I guess, saying developing world too. 650,000. You look over, it says 30 to 40% of leg amputees are fitted with a prosthetic solution. In the Western world, upwards of 60%. Emerging markets, 10 to 30%. Wow. So the emerging market is the largest market where we're going to see the increase of amputations, but it's also the least amount that people are going to get fit. So it's pretty obvious that you want to focus on the 100 or the 200,000, but at the max, you're only going to get 60% of that. So every company, big company, small company, little company, whatever, they're fighting for 60% of 200,000 people a year, essentially.
That's a lower leg, right? The lower leg. Yep.
Well, that would probably, that says lower leg. Yep.
Yep.
The other interesting thing is when you look at this slide, it says 65 to 70 is the average age of the amputee population. Well, that's not what you're seeing in the news, is it? You know, you don't see the 70-year-old person that's showing off their $100,000 arm. You see the ones in more basic prostheses. So this is what I think is most interesting to me is the bionics. I love them, all that stuff, but really probably not for this patient population. But what they have done is they've invested their portfolio into some of these things where it does actually target this average age of the amputee population. But that also means another thing is they have put themselves in a position to reach the people in the emerging markets because it's the lower dollar stuff. And I think it's very smart. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting.
I think it's interesting also for a different reason, because like there's two ways you could read this. So basically they're saying there's 850,000 of these guys in the world, 200,000 in the Western world of lower leg amputees annually per year, 650,000 in the emerging markets, right? Only 30 to 40% are fitted with prosthetic solutions, where the percentage is far higher in the Western world than in emerging markets, right? And the average age is 70. So what we're seeing here, like there's two ways of looking at this, right? There's three basic things you can draw from this. There's a ton you can draw from this, actually. But one is, oh my God, what we need is lower cost solutions for these emerging markets, right? Because that's where the growth is. That's a three times larger market. Right. Market penetration is also much lower. So it's actually kind of more, blue ocean, but it's more open, that market. And we have to fight for it in France with like gold and so many other competitors. But if we started up in Benin, we'd maybe be the first people there, right? So that's the one thing that you could just say, look at this slide and say, oh my goodness, I've got this market that I'm already king in. And you know what the big growth is in that market? Like a similar thing has happened in mobile phones where there's these people, there's several companies, the name escapes me again, that they've sold the mobile phone market, and then they look at the mobile phone market. We've got Apple, we've got Samsung, all these giant companies. And you know what they did? They made special phones, much lower prices, specifically made for Africa. And they made their brands and they pushed them really, really hard across Africa. And they became leaders in that space because that was a much more kind of blue ocean type of space, right? The other thing that I think is really interesting is that only 30 to 40% of these people are prosthetic, even in places where you can get funded or partially funded for that. So what we don't see a lot of people doing is changing that or is working on how they can change that number, how they can make it more acceptable, more desirable, cooler, easier, cheaper for that group to become, 100%, right? Because if we see that these people don't do anything, because for whatever reason, of course, we could easily, out of that group, if only 30, 40% is getting a prosthetic, if we increase that a little bit, then we're using the same people, the same prosthetics, the same everything to reach more people. It's like free money, right? So that's the second thing I think is really, really interesting about the slide. And then the other thing is that I did not know, and that is the one thing that you found most surprising as well, the 70%, right? most people in this market that have these prosthetics are 70 years old, 65 to 70 years old. And that is any kind of business. You are scared of that. You are terrified of that. If your biggest customer group is 70, you're doing the math and you're saying, uh-oh, you know? Well, but also, yeah, go on.
Yeah, so I mean, I think to that point though, 65 to 70 is like, uh-oh. But you got to remember too, is in the U.S., you qualify for Medicare when you turn 65, which means that you're going to get your prosthesis paid for at a lower deductible, like a more will be covered than if you were, say, on a private plan. So you can say, oh, no, but you can also say, oh, yes, because we're going to get coverage it. So it's like that group of people not only will have the insurance coverage, but a lot of times will have the money as well to pay for their co-pays and co-insurance and that sort of thing. So it's almost like getting money from the government. So me, that's not a big
as
deal.
Worrying as if it were a clothing brand or whatever. Okay.
Right. Yeah, correct. Yeah. So, I mean, for me, it's like kind of like yippee because the government is going to be paying for these prostheses.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I agree. Okay, that does make me feel a bit differently about that. Okay, but that's interesting. But yeah, to me, it feels like they're going for the rich people rather than trying to make the market bigger, right? You know, it's kind of like that when in the oil crisis in the 80s or something, like when American cars were big and they kept making them, and then Toyota and all these guys came in with the smaller, cheaper, really tiny cars, and everybody's like, oh God, no, who wants them? Well, if oil prices go through the roof, it turns out a lot of people. So I think it's that kind of, they're leaving their huge door open for some company to come in here and say, you know what? I actually want to go for the bigger group. And I actually do want to figure out what it's like to import stuff into Benin and figure out how to do that and how to, you know, manufacture there or whatever. I want to do the hard, heavy lifting. So, yeah.
Well,
so that's an interesting bit.
We talk a lot about additive manufacturing and how we believe that to be the future of orthotics and prosthetics. There is zero in this report about additive manufacturing.
That's sobering. That's sobering process.
And so like so it's either somebody's keeping a really good secret or it's not really on the table, or they just see it as an alternative fabrication method, just like traditional fabrication. They don't say anything about traditional fabrication. We know they use a lot of carving. We also know that Naked Prosthetics uses 3D printing. I don't know, and you know, I can't say that I'm in the know, but they have some app-based stuff, say structure sensor type of stuff, maybe some phone stuff. I think actually Naked Prosthetics has just started using the iPhone 12 and above facial recognition for partial hand stuff, which is really cool. But I just found it fascinating that all this stuff that they're looking at, there's nothing about additive manufacturing on the roadmap. And that's tough to see here or what have you, especially when you have a partner to the south, like in Mexico, that has this technology. So it's one of two. I mean, I think they know that it's coming. And maybe they just don't want to tip their hand on which way they're going.
Yeah, but also if an investor, like, you know, they like to see things. This is made for investors, right? It's not necessarily made for us. So they like to see things that you own. Like, I have a patent, I have a device, I have a thing, I sell it, I'm allowed to sell it, I'm the only person in the world to sell it. So, you know, for them to show off like an HP machine as being the future is not, you know, doesn't exactly help build their story. You know, it's kind of more stuff like, this is what we are doing to make our own future. Like, you know, an HP machine, everyone else could buy it as well. So then maybe they think, you know, they don't really have a handle on how that necessarily can lead to growth. But we both know that they could patent a ton of stuff in additive, and that they probably are patenting a ton of stuff in additive. So it is part of their growth, but I think it maybe doesn't fit the story very well at this point. If they would have their own machines, for example, then maybe it does.
Well, and so I think that's... So I don't disagree with your take on that. However, one of the things that they've been pushing with the digital manufacturing side of things, like carving and that sort of thing, and some of their app-based stuff. So they do have some modification software that is called Design Studio. Hasn't been updated in a while, but they might be working on that on the backside. But they have what they call the Oser leg, or it's almost like leg in a box. You know, we've talked about that where, hey, you 3D print your socket, you've got your components, and it all comes in a box, and you put it together. There is not a better story to tell than centralized production, centralized design, decentralized production, right? And so you've got all these locations where you could do production, and you have an area where you could do centralized design and create these kind of like leg in a box type of things. To me, that's a story worth telling. And it's just something that popped out to me.
One thing I just want to point out, that if we're looking at the beginning slide, one of the things that pops out to me is that EBITDA margin is 18%. So we said earlier that margins are 60%. EBITDA margin is 18%, which is still, you know, nice, and still nice if you're in hardware and stuff like that. But I did want to point out, just in case people think that we're doing like a different kind of thing.
And that's probably average, including the clinical sites, right? So I think there's two. Yeah. So there's, I think you're probably right on like the production side of things, or the manufacturing side of things, that those numbers are going to be higher. Whereas like even a healthy clinical practice, you're still, I mean, you'd love to get to double digits, but more than likely not happening unless you're super controlling costs, which they're going to be able to do because they own a vertical.
Yeah. So their whole story is about them being increasingly patient focused. And basically it kind of like you show them like being like much more one-stop shop, essentially, right? I mean, I think that's what we got. They make the orthotics, they make the tools, and they also do the you know, patient care and everything else. And that's kind of what they point out. What's really interesting that I did not expect is that prosthetics and something called neuroorthotics, which I'm sure not sure what that even is 46% of sales, right? Bracing is 18%, and patient care is 36%. So that's already like a huge chunk. Like I until I saw this slide, literally, if you would have told me, I would have thought that the prosthetics part of this was way, way bigger than it is.
Well,
is that a surprise as well? Or are you like, you know?
Well, so when you take a look at the stats and such, and I'd love to know just a little bit more on that, but like people that have had strokes or that have been in a terrible accident or different conditions that leave them in a weakened state or a paralyzed state, you know, those people are looking for braces, and they would far outnumber any of the prosthetic care thing by a large margin. And so I think that's where this Fjord and Gentz acquisition gets very interesting. Now, what I know about the joint, while it is an amazing joint, is quite expensive to manufacture. I mean, it's very complicated. There's a lot going on. And so I think they will probably be looking at something to be able to take that design and incorporate it into a brace that is more cost effective than what it currently is. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. But I think that group of bracing stands to be a large part of growth. And I mean, at 46% of total sales, that already shows, hey, this is something that we're committed to. You know, I think what's interesting about that slide, and for those that are following along, that is slide 5. You know, you've got 40%, 6% of total sales in the prosthetics and the neuro side. And then you have the Fjord and Gentz people acquired. And I think what that shows is that the neuro side is growing. So stroke, MS, Charcot-Marie-Tooth, a bunch of other things in the bracing side of things is growing, and they want to capitalize on that. The other thing that we have not talked about, and when you take a look at these pictures, is carbon fiber, right? So Flexfoot was an early carbon foot. So they have tribal knowledge in the carbon fiber space, and that is also allows you to have an advantage when you're making some of these more advanced devices that incorporate a joint like what the Fjord&Gantz stuff does. So they're taking some technology they already have, acquiring another one, and creating a whole different product class, and be able to bring the price down because they control that whole process. I think it's pretty smart.
We also see that they have a reasonably split revenue between basically the U.S. and Europe, right? Or the U.S. and Brazil, I think, U.S., Canada, Brazil, and Europe. And a really small in APAC, right? And they don't seem to be really be kind of like being like, a lot of companies like, oh my God, the future's China or whatever. They don't really seem to be relying on this. They also tell us about like, that they make the bionics in Iceland and Scotland, most of their stuff in the U.S. and Mexico. And they only have the soft goods, which I think would be like pads and stuff like that, outsourced in China. So they don't really seem also like they're going to go like super low cost, like let's make everything in China as well.
Yeah, well, that's a dangerous game because you end up starting to see other products that look like yours and almost are exactly the same as yours in there.
But it's almost, I agree with you. And I think almost if they're seeding this Asian market, if they're saying like, okay, China is the future. Yes, there's going to be lots more people that can afford lots more in the future there. And there's lots of people there, obviously. But we think that local players are going to, kick our butt there. Whereas they are active in Brazil, which is another one of these markets, these emerging economies that could be very interesting for them to do. Another thing that I think is really cool, 70 to 80% of prosthetic component sales are to recurring sales to existing patients. Wow. That means that if you are trusted and if they know how to find you and they know how to find your prosthetist, they'll keep buying for you. So I think that is, to me, is like a really very, very exciting kind of number that really, really does indicate that this is a relationship business, not only for the prosthetist, right? We always talk about that prosthetist relationship with the patient, but also for the bigger device companies at the back, that relationship with the prosthetist and with the, if your prosthetist is more likely to recommend more products from Osir as they do now, there's a huge influence that could have,
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing that's interesting about that is that they also have dominated so long the athletic side of the market. So they're the ones that, you call the cheetah foot, well, they're the first ones that had the cheetah foot, that C-spring style foot. So I think that's interesting. But you have a patient that, like what we've had on before, Faisal Hamdoun, and he tried all kinds of prosthetic knee joints and always would come back to the total knee joint. So he literally tried a $60,000 knee joint and instead chooses a $3,000 knee joint to go do his activities of daily living. So and it's really Osir. And then going back to their roots of the gel liners, if you ask a prosthetist who makes the best gel liners, most of them are going to say Osir. Now, Osir's products are the most expensive products. And a lot of times, because of funding and such, you're not able to do that. But they have a standard of quality and they charge appropriately and proportionally for the perceived standard and the true standard of quality when it comes to liners and such. But it does leave some market open for lower cost. But what's interesting is they have not really gone into the budget side of those liners. It's, hey, this is what we're good at. This is what we're known for. These liners, even though they shouldn't, they can last forever. and we're just going to keep on that. And this is the price and it is what it is.
Yeah. One concrete thing I just want to point out as well, they're saying their growth strategy, there's a bunch of vague stuff in it, innovative solutions. Yeah. Okay. O&P value creation, of course. Right. But there's one thing that jumps out of me there. It's like one of the five main growth pillars, right? One is bracing simplified. So that seems to me to be like a thing that they expect a lot from that. And they expect a lot from that bracing thing to really become a bigger thing for them.
I think that's a good point. And so one aspect of that I love is that a lot of times the people that need bracing, there is also, and this for people that have had like a traumatic brain injury or some other types of things, there's also cognitive issues that happen at that time. Mm-hmm. And so like if you have a bunch of straps and all those straps stick together, that's going to be frustrating. So figuring out how people that don't have use of one arm and don't necessarily have care in-house put a brace on and be successful every single day, the only way that you can get there is something that's simplified. So I think that's a great catch, and I think it's super important, especially moving into that market.
I think it's okay. I think another thing is really what I thought was really interesting is this whole, they have a thing, well, they have a nice thing showing that they offer products from up until mind-controlled prosthetics, which I think is like the big thing in the future. But they have solutions from $70 to $40,000. I think that's really quite active. Bionic feet and knee, you know, everything. But they also say something really interesting, and that is that solutions that match the needs of low active amputees. So we're talking about the elderly. We're talking about people who are now, you know, we're getting this group of about a billion people or something like this in OECD countries, the rich countries. They're 70 plus, and they really want to, you know, reduce the risk of falls, reduce the cost of elderly care, increase mobility. So they're looking at people that are quite elderly that maybe have things like, well, you were mentioning stroke before, but maybe also things like from diabetes and other things like mixes of different kind of pathologies all going on, morbidity, but or all the sorts of stuff going on. You know, and they want to take these guys from a socket to a user-friendly technology, whatever that means, right? Which I thought was really interesting. What does it go from socket molding to a user-friendly technology? I think that might be a reference to additive, right? And then from a mechanical knee to a powered knee. So I think that they really see this rich group in the rich countries that are increasingly have a higher expectation of doing cool things when they're older, right? You don't want to just sit behind the geraniums and watch like the Golden Girls, right? You want to do stuff. You want to travel. You want to go on a cruise, whatever. And to target that market that are also, as you said before, they have Medicaid and all that kind of stuff, but they're also probably the kind of quite wealthy. So that's also quite innovative to me to say, you know, no, we're not going to focus on the kids. We are going to actually develop products for this elderly, low mobility. You know, we're not doing the athlete that's going to win the Paralympics or something. No, we're going to do that big group of people that is sitting there retired and they want to go to Italy, right?
Well, yeah. And I think so, the other part of what you were saying that from socket molding to user-friendly technology, one of the things, and you wouldn't know this unless you looked really, really hard at that slide, is you see the lacing. So that on the one socket, so that is a tip of the cap to adjustable technology. So something that has some adjustability to it. Now, they do not have, as far as I know, a relationship with Click Medical, which we had on earlier for the Revo Fit, and then they had started with the Boa dials. But that is a big part of taking care of a more elderly population, is especially ones that has a vascular issue, is that you're going to want to have adjustability because
so they're totally going to buy one of those two. You know? There's like two options, right? There's like the go big or go home, or like the smaller kind of like guys we had on, and you know, that could be interesting.
It would be interesting. I don't know how all that would go, but that would be interesting. But nonetheless, it's a tip of the cap.
See, Brent thinks they're going to buy Boa.
Yeah. That is not what I said. I said that they value adjustability, and that's where we'll leave it.
Okay. All right. Okay. Are they going to invent a competitor as well? And like, you know, okay. Okay. And then another thing is, I think is really interesting, and I don't know if this is going to work, right? So they also have identified the CPO shortage, which is something we've talked about. And then the new generation of CPOs being like clinical efficiency and clinical labor, that kind of thing, regulatory burden, and digitization is in there, right? So what they're going to do, what they want to do for a business partner, so OMP is one, is outsource fabrication. They want to make the OSHA leg. They want to do CFAB. They seem to want to be in that market, right? And they also want to use an app to help you get reimbursement. And they also want you to do like partners and compliance audits and reimbursement regulatory. And they also want to be your business IT management company. I mean, is that something that, you would like, okay, your guys are independent. Let's say, would you be like, really be like, oh my God, oh sir, yeah, please. Or would you be a little bit hesitant to, look to them for this kind of stuff? I mean, I know you're a fan of them as like a component company, but if they started all of a sudden saying, oh, we're going to do all your IT and you're doing reimbursements.
Yeah, I would say probably not. I mean, and the main reason is, well, I guess I would say it depends, right? It depends what the offer is. Mm-hmm. Well, if my margins increase because you're taking care of everything and then we're also doing components and that sort of thing, maybe. But one of the things that I think we can't be naive about with some of these big companies that have distribution partners and that sort of thing is if they take a look and they say, oh my goodness, you should take a look at what Brent's doing in Raleigh with that company. Maybe we should put another office right there and give them a little competition, or or maybe we should buy them. But you're giving them information or data that is valuable based on how busy your clinic is. And I would say mm-hmm. just those are the types of thoughts that you have to have, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Regardless of who you're using for your distribution and components mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. This is how they mm-hmm. make a living. And there's very, very smart people.
They don't. I mean, they could ring fence it, right? They could have some kind of Chinese wall thing stuck between these two things. But it would be, if they don't tell you that there's like some kind of ring fence data thing, then yeah, okay, somebody at corporate, some really bright-eyed, bushy-tailed kid is going to be like, okay, let's have, you know, where are the clinics making the most money in America? And they're definitely not going to go away from that. So yeah. I think that's something I think you should think about, unless they do, you know, give you a little contract that says that your data will be, I don't know, you know, managed by somebody else or something like that. The other thing. Their M&A strategy things, three things they want to do: market access, reaching more patients. So that's good news if you would like to sell your clinic, I think. This means they are looking at that. I don't know if they want to buy individual clinics or larger units, but hey, they're looking at market access, and that would be a way for them to obtain it. The other one is portfolio expansion. Now, serving more chronic patients, okay, means they're not going to go the Dr. Scholl's route, I'm guessing. Portfolio extension. And the third is technology, innovative O&P solutions. So I think those are the three things they're going to focus on. And I think, you know, bracing, right? Some kind of like open and shut BOA type like solution, more clinics, more, what don't they have? You know, let's look at that. You know, that kind of thing. Are there areas of the market that they don't have yet? So I'm pretty sure they're going to buy it because they seem to want to be like the total, like, one-stop shop of this stuff, you know?
Yeah. 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 I don't know where, like, if I was them, I don't know where I would look next.
Yeah. What would you do? Yeah. That's a good question. Yeah. It's actually a better question than my question.
You know, where would I go?
What would you buy if you were Osher?
Yeah. You really have to take a look at who is doing stuff in the bleeding edge on the manufacturing side of things, software side of things, materials, stuff that can complement what you already have. Mm-hmm. But I know that there is a shortage of technicians that make stuff, and they make a lot of upper extremity prostheses. I think the turnaround time on one of their prostheses takes a long time, but there's not many people that can do it because of the labor that's so specialized. Mm-hmm. Is there something that can take that pain out? Not necessarily replace it as far as people. But is there something that, hey, I've got this $60,000 arm that I need to fabricate, but I can't get it back for X amount of time? How can I say, you know what, if you have a scan or a test socket or whatever in alignment, and you're going to have that back in 3 days, not only will you turn cash flow better for that independent clinic, you also then turn cash flow for yourself because you don't have this tied up. And so if you are able to squeeze that in a little bit, I think that's a win.
I think what I would do, so then I'd just buy the whole software tool chain, you know, accounting software, reimbursement, everything. they're going to need it anyway. They want to operate a lot of clinics, so they're going to want that whole software backbone. So I would just cobble that together, buy like 5-6 companies, whatever I need, have the whole solution, so I'm the best solution in the world. Then use my own clinics to make that solution the best, and then kind of like sell that to everyone else. And then do that as like a subscription thing. $30 a month for all the software you need or whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, if I get all the data, well, it's beautiful. I'll know how many people are doing in the Southwest are doing finger stuff, and I'll know what's on the rise and what people want and what's being problematic for reimbursement. So that kind of mean, that's what I would do. I think if they really see that operating co, that service business is a big part, because then, you know, imagine how important appointment software is to them, like an easy way for you to get an app to make an appointment. If they want to operate hundreds of clinics, they already have 200 of them. That just, if they make that software just a little bit better, that people don't have to call to the clinic, that is just going to save them tons of money.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and decrease cancellations and all that stuff, canceled appointments, stuff, 100%. Yeah. So I think, the software side, I don't know anything about their internal software side of things.
I have no idea.
It's funny that you say that, because there's really only a few providers of software specific for O&P.
Yeah, exactly. There's a bunch of them that have been on our show, and I'm thinking, that would fit nice. That would be nice. That would be yummy.
Yeah. So, but what happens if you're an independent software company, and then all of a sudden you get bought by Oster, and then now you're selling to all the independents that you were at? It really puts them in a tight spot. So, but I think after this whole exercise, it should be super obvious to people that these big companies aren't going anywhere. They have money, they have cash, they're going to be buying things up to make things better for themselves, access for patients, that sort of thing. And in the end, what are we going to be left with in 10 years, 20 years, or what have you? Not a ton of independent companies.
Yeah, but okay, so let's look at this as somebody else, Otterbock, right? Often in the same breath as Oster, often also on the premium end, big portfolio. What if they stay like, we're the independent, we're not going to compete with you, kind of? Or do you think that they're just going to be two integrated players as well? Or do you think Otterbock is going to be much more like the device route, if you will?
So Otterbock has already been in clinical care for a long, long time. So they're probably, if they're not the biggest worldwide, and then they've started adding clinics. I think they've been on a little bit of a freeze of late, buying clinics. But they already have patient care clinics, so it's pretty much the same.
Okay. So they're probably going to do the same thing.
Yeah. So I mean, their struggles are the same: the software side, how to vertically integrate, how do we get this stuff out. The one thing that we didn't talk about that I think is really important, and we have talked about it before, about Hanger and specifically, but now that these other companies are coming in, you have to be absolutely sure when these products go on the market that they're ready for people. Because you never want to get involved in some sort of recall thing because you didn't do your due diligence. That's
one, especially in the States, right? It could be huge.
So I think that's one of the things that's interesting about this whole thing is, and I think that's why been a little bit slow into the additive side of things, is you don't want to put something out there and these clinics are loving it. And then you're out there, say 2,000 or 3,000, 4,000 prostheses. And all of a sudden somebody comes and says, oh, by the way, we had a bad batch of powder and you're going to have to recall all that. You don't want to be in the middle of that. And so that is something that
it's not mature enough for them.
Is it or is it not? I don't know. Or are there ways that you can get around some of that for these big companies? Or how do you minimize the risk of getting involved into additive manufacturing? So I think those are all things that I don't envy the people that make those decisions, that it's, 'cause it's truly black and white, and I can't see in the black and white, right? It's It's mm-hmm. gray to me. We're a small company. Mm-hmm. We're mm-hmm. nimble. We move quickly. Mm-hmm. But when you're trying to drive this big ship and you see a technology that can potentially really give some hockey stick growth, it's hard to mm-hmm. hard to pull back.
Totally agree. I think it's going to be exciting. I think this is really interesting. I think from a business perspective, this is really interesting. What I am seeing, like the one thing I want to see more of, like if you're looking at this in a growth perspective, is yeah, the software tool chain thing seems like the most important thing. They keep on buying innovative. They've been really good at buying innovative stuff so far, making it themselves. So that's cool. They know what they make. They know what they don't make. So they'll probably go on buying wherever and buying the right stuff. That's good as well. Cheetah, whatever. But they do in this presentation do talk about, like, you know, we want lower cost products for the developing world. But I really would have liked them to just say, hey, you know what? We've got 100 dudes. We're going to teach them all to speak Bahasa Indonesia, and we're going to set them all up in Indonesia because that's this giant country, and we're going to, like, you know, make that a country for us. You know, we're going to really expand in those really emerging ginormous markets. There's something I used to say. This is really long time ago. Remember when BlackBerry was like a phone that people had, yeah. right? And I would always tell this to people, and it's kind of bad that BlackBerry died. But I would say, how many BlackBerry users are there in Nigeria, right? And then I'd always ask people, like, because we were always talking about, you know, 3D printing being a solution for very few people, like this N is one kind of thing. And I said, well, you know how many BlackBerry, and everybody would get it wrong always. And there were 20 million BlackBerry users in Nigeria at the time. And that is just an astounding number, right? If you talk about the country I'm from, the Netherlands, we have less people than there are people that back in the day used to use BlackBerries in Nigeria. So there's just like these, wait a minute. So if I have developed an app showing Nigerian football or whatever, that is a huge market, maybe a bigger app than you could make for all the Dutch people to be on. So I think there is just so many numbers there, and it would be so valuable for one of these guys. He's like, you know, we all know what's Kingmaker, right? If it's either going to be, is Hanger going to build its own Oser quicker? Is Oser going to build its own Hanger? Or is Oser going to buy Hanger, right? That's it, because Hanger's Kingmaker, right? Or is also going to buy up so many clinics that they become an alternative for Hanger or a regional champion or something. And then I think the other way of looking at this is say, you know what? If it's going to be Hanger or these clinics, eventually they'll be super expensive. How about Indonesia, guys? Let's go. Let's do this. You know, and I think that's the only thing I'm missing a little bit that I'm like, you know, I think that would be a big thing if one of these guys like really focus on an emerging market with a strong Vietnam. Right? Think of companies like that, 80 million, 100 million, 300 million people. I mean, that's going to be, you know, their development is huge, and it's going to be huge going forward. So that's the one thing I want to see a little bit more of. If they really want growth, I can understand maybe they're shy of China because they don't want to get copied and all this. But hey, what about a company like Vietnam or Indonesia that are huge? Anyway, that's what I like to say. Hey, I thought this was great, dude. I can't wait to see what people will think of this. So I thought, thanks for like doing this. I think this was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. And I don't know if we should say it, but probably something like on the last slide of Emblem Medical that says, these are, Joris and I are not trained professionals in the orthotic prosthetic investment. These are forward-looking statements.
Yeah, exactly. I know nothing. I'm not a registered investment advisor. This is not investment advice. Yeah.
This is just purely our opinion on what we see.
Exactly. But hey, and join in, guys, because this is all like we're looking into the tea leaves of the future and stuff. So yeah, tell us what you think. And maybe you have a completely different opinion. And that would be really exciting for us to learn about as well. So thank you so much for listening to the Prosthetics and Orthotics podcast with Brent Wright and Joris Spiels. Have a great day.